is number 061448, the United States against Rodney Andrews. Mr. Lieberman.
Good morning, and may it please the court. I am Michael Lieberman with Federal Defender Services of Wisconsin. I am here today representing the appellant Rodney Andrews, as I did in the district court. I think this case requires the court to, at a minimum, revisit its holding in United States versus Stevens, and then I guess decide one of three things. One, that it really is as broad as everybody thinks it is, and it should stay that way. Two, overrule that case as inconsistent with precedent from other circuits. Or three, clarify what exactly the court meant in Stevens by its what on its face appears to be a very broad holding that amnesia is never a bar.
I want to know, Mr. Lieberman, if we were to do one of two things, either read Stevens as perhaps not standing for quite the absolute rule. Stevens certainly doesn't rule out looking other things. It just says amnesia is not a bar, so we don't know what that means, always, sometimes, never. But if we were to read Stevens the way you would like us to read Stevens, consistently with the way the other circuits have approached the amnesia question, the problem I'm having with this case is how that would help you. I mean, to be honest, looking at the pictures of Mr. Andrews that were captured on the bank cameras in the record, and they're extraordinarily good pictures. And then taking into account the rest of the government's evidence, I just don't know how this is the case in which a more free-flowing inquiry would make any difference.
Well, Your Honor, given the record in this case, they are very clear bank photos. They've never been identified as being Mr. Andrews. They have been identified as looking like other people. Those people were ultimately ruled out as suspects in the case, but there is not a witness that has come forward in this case, and there is nowhere in the record, not the stipulated facts, nowhere else, that a witness, whether it's one of the tellers, whether it's anybody, has said that photo is the defendant Rodney Andrews.
But that takes me to another thing that's just struck me as odd about the way this case was handled, because it would seem to me, in cases like this one, where there's an amnesia question, the government in all cases bears the burden of proving its case beyond a reasonable doubt. It's not entitled to any help from the defendant. The defendant can just leave the government to its proof. And it was odd to me that this was this thing called a stipulated trial. I don't know why it couldn't have been a jury trial. I don't know why it couldn't have been a normal bench trial where perhaps tellers would have been called and said, would you please identify this picture? Is that the defendant sitting here in the courtroom? And this procedure, which I guess was agreed to by both sides because it's a stipulated trial, seems to have foreclosed the very opportunity for what you're talking about.
Well, I can first explain, at least from my perspective, why we did it that way and how I don't believe that foreclosed that opportunity at all. From the beginning of this case, and the court can look at the original motion for a competency evaluation, the motion for a second competency evaluation, the transcript of the motion hearing on the motion for a second competency evaluation, and even the transcript of the stipulated trial itself. It was clear that from the beginning of this case, what I was looking for, because I thought it was what the case required, was an opportunity to get back in front of this court and address this question of amnesia, because what Stevens doesn't make clear is whether it's just I was so high on drugs that I can't remember. That's one type of amnesia. Another type of amnesia is I used drugs for so long that I now have lesions on my brain. I am now cognitively disabled. I have organic brain problems that makes me physically unable to remember. That's what I was asking for in the second motion for an evaluation.
But the government then stipulates to that. You know, the neurologist will call that an inability to register memory. And as I understand it, they have stipulated, although there's some language in their brief that is not so clear about that. But let's assume that is the stipulation. I still don't see why, at the trial level, if in fact, hypothetically, you know, there had been five witnesses all walk in and say, here's the picture of the man who robbed the bank, there's the defendant, it's the exact same guy, or the person who saw an individual standing there with the cigarette butts and said, yes, I think it's the same person. You have harmless error concepts that do come in, even if one could imagine a case where amnesia would so impede a defendant's ability to defend himself that one might have to toss the prosecution. I don't know what that case looks like, but it sure doesn't look like this case.
Well, Your Honor, when we were putting the stipulated set of facts together, that was a document drafted by the prosecutor. He drafted what his trial evidence would be, and we agreed that that would, in fact, be the trial
evidence.
That's
what those people would say, right?
So I assume that if there were witnesses who would say that photograph is, in fact, Rodney Andrews, that would have been part of the stipulated set of facts for use at the trial. The other thing the prosecutor could have done is shown the photo to Judge Crabb and asked her to make a finding as the then fact finder whether the photo clearly enough resembled the defendant. That was never done. The stipulated bench trial was more a concession to the fact that Mr. Andrews couldn't plead guilty because he didn't know for sure whether he did it or not, but that if the case went to a jury trial, the evidence was at least sufficient to get past a Rule 29 stage and would get to the jury, and then with no ability to defend ourselves, he would clearly be convicted. So it was an effort to resolve the case in the cleanest way possible in the district court to get the issue before this court as to whether or not, because it's clear the district court read Stevens, as I think we may all have in the district court, that amnesia, no matter what its cause, no matter what it's functioned by, is never a issue. So there was no need for this second competency evaluation. If this court now decides that's not really what Stevens meant, then I think the case has to go back so that we can develop the record to allow the court to make, this may not ultimately be the case that persuades the court that this is the case where amnesia is bad enough to prevent prosecution. I don't think there's a good enough record for this court to make that decision, and I think the reason there's not a good enough record is I was denied the opportunity in the district court to make that record because of the court's ruling, reading of Stevens. I notice that I'm into my rebuttal time, so I'd like to reserve that if I could.
Thank you, counsel. We'll hear now from Mr. Anderson for the government.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Robert Anderson. I'm the Assistant United States Attorney in the Western District, who is the trial attorney in this case. I have the privilege of representing the United States in this matter. This circuit's decisions in Stevens and in Kolb versus Leach versus Kolb correctly limit considerations of competency to mental disease or defect, which impair the ability of the defendant to understand and participate in the trial process.
But how can he participate if he has never created a memory in the first place? There are people with that condition. It's like you putting a CD in a burner and nothing burns onto it, and so there's no way that you can play it back ever. There's no amount of refreshing or anything else that will make it anything but a blank CD.
Sure. But his participation in the trial is not limited to what facts he can recall.
But it's an important component of it, though, and if he has absolutely no ability to assist his attorney in creating a defense, he doesn't know where he was.
That's different. That's different.
Well, it's the component, though, of what goes on at the trial.
Sure, but even if you look at the Wilson case that the appellant relies so heavily upon, the Wilson case in a footnote there, footnote 4, said a defendant's awareness of his whereabouts and activities at the time of the crime is not an essential ingredient to the to competence.
Well, but surely to competence, look, you can sit there and I guess talk to the lawyer all day at the trial, but if you have absolutely no memory who you were, where you were, which state you were in, how could you assist the lawyer?
Well, it's not whether the defendant can remember a fact that helps his attorney that allows him necessarily to be capable and competent to be tried.
Why isn't it that?
What the statute looks at is there are many other ways in which a defendant has the ability to assist his counsel. And that the statute,
like
4241, says he has the ability to consult with his attorney to a reasonable degree of understanding.
Like
that
what are they consulting about?
Well, in this instance, there is nothing that prevented him from sitting down with his counsel and looking at the photographs of he himself in the bank and say, boy, that looks like me, or that's not me. Here's why it's not me. I never had clothing like that.
But he doesn't smoke cigarettes. He doesn't know.
He knows what he looks like himself, and he knows he doesn't have an entire lack of memory. His claim is only that he lacks memory of the two-week span of time that he was allegedly in Wisconsin committing the bank robberies.
Right. I mean, but you stipulated that was the case, and so had you wanted to contest that, that was available to you.
Sure.
It's a physical possibility that he really has no memories registered from that period of time.
There is that possibility.
And so you stipulated,
that's difficult.
Where we have the case.
Exactly. But it's difficult to tell. What my point in the brief is that...
But you can't
not
back
this,
off on that
no,
right now.
No, and I'm not. My point in the brief is, though, however, that if we open up the doors to saying any lack of recollection, where do you draw the line? If you have a lack of recollection, defendants are going to then, that'll be the defense du jour.
Well, neurologists test that all the time, actually, whether there's lack of registration, whether there's lack of short-term memory, whether there's lack of long-term memory.
Right, and they tested it in his instance, too, for the competency evaluation, and they said he's fine in all respects, except during this period of time, he claims to have no recollection of any of these events.
How many banks did he rob?
Five of them during that two-week period of time.
And the one
he left the DNA evidence behind at is the one that was charged when we went to trial on.
And he was only charged with one, or what? How did they work that five robberies?
We had the stipulated bench trial on the one, which involved the DNA evidence and had those photographs that are in the record. The other ones, there were photographs in the evidence relative to those two. But to answer the earlier question from Judge Wood, why this was stipulated bench trial is the defendant didn't want to not get the benefit of acceptance of responsibility. He didn't dispute the government's evidence. However, he could not, as he said, go into court and tell the judge what he did and acknowledge what he did. And the government would not accept an Alford plea. By policy from the Department of Justice, will not do that or allow that. So we presented the evidence to the judge, for the judge, based on the agreement between us, defense counsel and myself, for the judge to make the determination that there was evidence beyond a reasonable doubt that he committed that bank robbery. And then he also, as part of a collateral agreement, stipulated or agreed that we would be able to prove his involvement in the other offenses for purposes of relevant conduct.
Well, I don't know. The reason I ask this is for a guy that can't remember anything for 2 weeks managed to get away with robbing five banks.
Yes.
That's pretty amazing.
Yes. Yes. But as I said, it's difficult to test his claim or for us to contest his claim that he doesn't have any recollection of that. And for purposes of this appeal, this circuit's decisions in Stevens and Leach versus Kolb are correct. And they are not inconsistent necessarily with the authority in the other circuits. This circuit has said, actually, appellant overstates the holding of this circuit in Stevens by saying that amnesia is never a bar to prosecution. That's not what Stevens says. Stevens says amnesia is not a bar to prosecution of an otherwise competent defendant. So this court or the district courts are looking at the other factors of otherwise competent. The other circuits say amnesia is not per se a bar to prosecution. This circuit just didn't choose to use the words per se. It instead used the qualification, not per se, but the qualification otherwise competent. So the court and the district court are still examining whether a defendant is competent to sit down with his attorney and examine the evidence, which is what the role of the defense attorney is, to not to come up with necessarily an alternative theme for how a crime was committed, but to look at the government's evidence, to review that evidence with the defendant, and look at how they can challenge the evidence, use the presumption of innocence, and in many cases a defendant never even gets on, competent defendants never get on the stand and testify when challenging that evidence. You can even see in the defendant's reply brief there were things that he had to say about the evidence that we pointed out, the photographs and about the DNA. Theories or arguments that he could have made to a jury, which didn't involve the defendant ever getting on the stand and testifying at all. The competency test is whether the defendant can sit there and understand what his attorney is doing, agree with what his attorney is doing, even if he doesn't have a fact that can help him. If a defendant is alleged to have committed a crime, and he thinks that day 100 miles away he was in a bar talking to some guy, but he just can't remember the name of that guy or his phone number, we can't say that because he can't remember that isolated fact that it's unfair to try him. What the defendant would have this court say is that if due to a voluntary intoxication or drug use, you can't remember events or details of your crime, regardless of the fact that there's no mental disease or defect, regardless of the fact that your intoxication wouldn't be a legal defense at trial, because this was a general intent crime, that this changing the ruling would allow you to end run around the intoxication defense, or preclusion of the intoxication defense, and say, gee, since you can't remember the facts of this, that means you're never going to have to go to trial at all. So there's the door. We can't try you because, despite the fact we have 20 witnesses to what you did, or we have you on videotape, since you can't remember it, it's unfair to try you. And that's
which, of course, isn't the test the other circuits have taken. They all take into account the strength of the government's case, among other things.
Correct. Correct. And that's why I point out the strength of the government's case in this instance.
Right.
And what would Mr. Andrews did have a recollection of what happened that day, what would he possibly get on the stand and testify to that would contradict the DNA evidence? They could bring in an expert of their own choosing to challenge the DNA evidence. Mr. Andrews isn't going to be doing that.
Well, all they can say is that the man smoking the cigarettes outside the bank isn't the same man as the man who was inside the bank later on robbing it, right?
The DNA evidence
conclusively proves that somebody was standing outside, Mr. Andrews, for that matter, was standing outside the bank smoking.
The DNA evidence linked the person that was identified smoking those cigarette butts. The witness said, I saw the man that went into the bank smoking cigarette butts out here before he went into the bank, that man that matches the description of the bank robber. And then the DNA from the cigarette butts links to Mr. Andrews. Another fact which Mr. Andrews is aware of and has in his memory is his own, if we exclude the fact, okay, he can't remember 2001 and when this happened over 2 weeks, Mr. Andrews knows that he has prior criminal history for robbing banks, and that would factor into his recollection and possible recognition that it was likely, that is something that I would likely do, or
could
possibly
could have
done.
Propensity to rob banks? I mean, that seems odd.
My time is up. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. You have 2 minutes, Mr. Lieberman.
Thank you. I want to, I guess, briefly respond to a couple of points. One, the cases that are cited in both briefs seem to draw, and I don't want to overstate this, they don't draw this distinction in the holdings, but factually they come down into, I think, two contextually different settings. One are the ones where there is medical physical evidence of brain damage. Leach versus Kolb, this case's second this court's second competency case. The court recognized that, and this is from page 1258 of the opinion, amnesia can be a sign of organic brain damage. In Leach, they then did an EEG test on the defendant's brain and realized that there was no sign of any organic brain damage. So I am not asking this court, as the government suggests, to say that every time somebody says, boy, I just can't remember, that you need to open the door. What I am asking the court to do is say, if a defendant can prove that they have a physical injury to their brain caused by whatever that prevents them from fully participating in the trial process, there's no principled basis to say that a brain damaged individual who can't remember should be treated differently than a brain-damaged individual who manifests that through paranoid schizophrenia. One would be found incompetent, and under this court's rule now, the other would not be, and I don't think the law supports that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lieberman. Thank you, Mr. Anderson. The case will be taken under advisement. The court has finished the call of the morning. Therefore, the court will be in recess until tomorrow morning at 9:30.